Good morning, Christ Church. It is so good to see you here today, no matter where you might be watching from. My name's Jason Cullum. I'm one of the pastors around here at Christ Church, and I'm just thrilled that you've made your weekend a part of our weekend. Now, this week, I was doing a little reminiscing. I was thinking back about the past 5 years of ministry around here at Christ Church. And I got to tell you, the last 5 years have been absolutely amazing, incredible, sometimes scary, absolutely fruitful. And I love, I'm just going to tell you, I was just thinking about how much I love you guys and how much I love teaching you the Word of God. And I love seeing God work in you and through you. I love watching how you just reach out and impact people's lives around you. I love how we just extend compassion all the time around here at Christ Church. And I tell you, one of the greatest privileges I think in my entire life has been the ability that God has given me to have a front row seat to literally watch thousands of lives find their way back to God. It has been unbelievable. And some, it was the very first time. And for some, it was sudden and dramatic. I mean, for others, you kind of walked away, wandered away from God a little bit, but then you found your way back. And some walked a long way away from God and took a while finding your way back. But I did the math this week. I was just thinking as I was reminiscing about what God has done and people who found their way back to God. And I added up some numbers this week. You know, we have baptized over 2,100 people in the past 5 years. Unbelievable what God is doing. And nearly 400 people already this year. I mean, white, black, Latino, Asian. We got the country club crowd and the Walmart crowd. We got it all here at Christ Church. And I just love what God is doing. And it's just so amazing to be able to see so many people, thousands literally, find their way back to God. And I know some of them have been you. Now, I grew up in Indiana, southern Indiana. I don't know much about the beach, especially before I moved down here. In fact, growing up in Indiana, I mean, I could tell you about basketball and corn, but I couldn't tell you about the ocean. And so I'll never forget one of my first trips here to Florida. And I learned about the ocean kind of the hard way. Because as a kid, I wanted to do nothing but go out on my boogie board and just ride those waves. As I'm a little kid, I grab my boogie board and I swim out through the waves and ride them in and swim out and ride them in and swim out and ride them in and swim out and ride them in. I do that for like an hour, hour and a half. And by the time I'm done, I'm exhausted. And I come crawling out of the water onto the beach, and I stand there on the shore, and I look to where the house that we were staying was supposed to be, and I say, who moved my house? It's not there anymore. It's gone. It used to be there. My family used to be there, but everyone's gone. And I look to the left. I look to the right. I could not find them anywhere. You see, I learned this very important lesson that in the ocean, there's this thing called an undertow. An undercurrent, and it has this ability to slowly take you further and further and further and further and further and further down the beach. But here's the truth of the matter. That happens in our spiritual life as well, doesn't it? It does. It happens slowly. It happens unperceptibly. We just slowly begin to drift further and further and further away from God. Now, we don't mean to do it. It's not intentional. I mean, we head off to college or the university or we start dating somebody new. Or maybe you take that new job or you get that promotion at work or you start to raise your family or you start to pursue your athletic career or you're trying to, you know, sharpen up your golf game. And before you know it, you're standing there and you're going, where am I? How did I get so far away from God? Listen, 82% of us in our country believe in God. But you know this? That over half of the people feel like they're distant or disconnected from God. And some of you are thinking, Jason, I think I'm too far away. I think I've drifted way too far. I don't know if there's any hope for me of ever coming back. Listen, there is hope. Listen to the promise that God gave the prophet Jeremiah, an incredible promise. Here's what he says, Jeremiah 29:13. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all of your heart. I mean, what an amazing promise. You will find me, is what God says. In the New Testament, James, he says these words, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. You can know God. You can find God. Draw near to him and he promises to draw near to you. Listen, everybody is a spiritual being, whether you want to admit it or not. We've all been created that way. We've been hardwired with this innate desire to want to connect with our Creator, to want to connect with God. And yet we live in this fallen, broken, busted up world where we are part of the problem. We are a part of that problem, and it leaves us feeling distant from God, and we just go further and further and further and further away from him. It's that Christian kid who grew up in the Christian home. Well, he memorized all the scriptures. She memorized all the scriptures in Sunday school, but they were ill-prepared when they went off to college. Maybe their roommate was an atheist. Maybe they had a professor that every time they walked into class, they made fun of Christians, made fun of their faith, and said they were small-minded, said the Bible is nothing but a bunch of fairy tales. Or maybe they were sitting around with some friends talking about how people in the name of religion have done so many atrocities to other people. And those doubts, they began to come to the surface and begin to drift further and further away from God to a point to where you get to the point where you're saying, you know what, anybody that believes all that stuff, all that Jesus stuff, all that God stuff, wow, they're just not really bright. I mean, they just aren't an intellectual lightweight. Or maybe you lost somebody in your life and you feel like God's forgotten you. Or maybe you've done some horrible things and you feel like God looks at you as you're disgusting. Or maybe you're the child of divorce and you've never really gotten over that. Or maybe you did grow up in church, but for you, it was just ritual after ritual after ritual. It never really connected to your heart. It never penetrated to your soul. Or maybe for you, it was the church that hurt you. Or it was the church leader who hurt you. Or maybe you felt abused, or you were abandoned, or you were forgotten by somebody you loved dearly. Or maybe you cried out to God for help, you prayed to him for help, and you do not feel like he ever answered your prayer. Listen, there are a million reasons that we can get caught in that undertow and just drift further and further and further away from God. And I believe that we all can agree with what the prophet Isaiah said when he said these words, We all, like sheep, have gone astray. We've drifted. We've all drifted. And yet we have this inner longing to reconnect with our God, with our Creator, the one who made us, to find our way back to him. And no matter who we are, we can find our way back to him. But there has to be an awakening in us. Quick show of hands. How many people in here have a hard time getting up in the morning? All right, be honest now, come on. It's 11 o'clock crowd. 9 o'clock, I had them all raise their hands, all right? You're not a morning person. You like to sleep in. All right, quick show. How many of you snore? Right, okay, no, hands down. Wives, tell the truth. How many of your husbands snore? All right, now we have the real numbers, all right? So here's what we're going to do. Over the next 5 weeks, we are going to unpack 5 awakenings that have got to be in our lives if we want to find our way back to God. And these are 5 moments that no matter who you are, no matter what you're doing, will always be present in your spiritual journey. And here's the deal. Some of you are going, but Jason, I think it's too late for me. I think I've wandered too far away. I think I've done too much. Or some of you are saying, Jason, this is really sweet, and it's really nice, and I'm glad you're doing this for all those people, but I've already found my way to God. Listen, here is what I believe. No matter who you are, if you're in this room, no matter where you are on your spiritual journey, every single one of us needs a spiritual awakening in our lives. If there's anything I've learned in my life, is every once in a while, I need a jolt. I need something to wake me up. I need a kick in my backside to awaken me, to draw me closer to my Heavenly Father. And so I think every one of us in this room need this. And so today we're going to unpack this first awakening. And the first awakening is the awakening of longing. The awakening of longing. It's where we're walking around, we're going through life, and we're asking this question. There's got to be more. Is this all that life's about? Because there has got to be more. It's the awakening of longing. And listen, here's the deal. I mean, these longings are so universal. They are in the art that we create. They are in the stories that we write. They are in the songs that we sing. In fact, let's do this. I'm going to sing some lyrics to you, and I want you to finish these lyrics for me, okay? And so this is a participation thing, all right? So here we go. I'll start out first. Rolling Stones. Here we go. You can't always get what you... Good, good. Somebody on over there. I don't know who that was. Good. All right, you too. I still haven't found. Good, good. All right, good, good. All right, here's an old one, all right? Johnny Lee. Some of you guys remember this one, all right? Looking for love. Don't finish it, all right? It's church, all right? It's church. We're not going to go any further with that one, all right? And here's another one. I mean, we know this one, all right? This is very... You ready for this one? Here we go. I can't get no satisfaction. Yeah, I can't get no satisfaction. All right, and Neil Diamond saying, I'm kidding. I'm not going to do Neil Diamond to you, all right? I know some of you are like, oh, Neil Diamond, right? There are two kinds of people in the world, those who like Neil Diamond and those who don't, all right? And I'm in the first category. I love some Neil Diamond. But here's the truth. Those songs prove that we have this deep desire, that we have this deep thing that's been planted in us, these longings that God has put in every single one of us. And they act like an alarm clock to awaken us, to draw us back to God. And here's what I want to do. I want you to hear some stories, okay? I want you to hear the stories of three incredible people, Bryce and Melissa and Jake. And I want you to see if your story sounds a little bit like their story. Watch this.
My father was an alcoholic, so I grew up in that type of a home. Once I became of age, drinking was just natural. I saw it, I did it, participated in it, got heavy into it. My first marriage was not very successful, and it ended fairly soon. I had a daughter with my first wife, and I was very into being a daddy. Having my daughter gone was very, very difficult. And it was probably at that time, as far as from a drinking standpoint, I got a lot heavier. Got married again, got into the same habit, same routine. My first marriage lasted 5 years. I had a daughter, got divorced. My second marriage lasted 5 years. I had a daughter, got divorced. Didn't really learn from my experiences. It was more a day-to-day, I want to feel good today, however that was. Alcohol, sex, success at work. There was no real foundation of anything significant that I was searching for. That was rock bottom for me. I've had two failed marriages in 10 years, two daughters that are no longer with me on a day-to-day basis. I'm by myself at this point.
My journey started when I was 2 years old and my mom and my dad divorced. And we had lived with my grandmother for a long time, and she had then at the time gave us an ultimatum to stay with her or to leave. And my grandmother and I did not have a good relationship. My mother and my grandmother did not have a good relationship. I met my ex-husband when I was a junior. It was great in the beginning. I didn't really know who I was though at 16, 17 years old to be in love or even know what it meant. It was just something was missing, but I just was so in the moment and wanted like to get married and the whole fairy tale that I kind of pushed those feelings aside. Once we had my daughter, it definitely took a turn for the worse. His behavior changed and my behavior changed, and I wanted out about a year after. And so I stuck with it for a little bit longer, and we went to therapy. And then once I found out I was pregnant with my son, I felt like I was just stuck. You know, I have two kids and I definitely don't want to be a single mom with two kids. So I knew something had to change, and I just kind of went the wrong way to make that change. I had an affair, and then on Father's Day weekend, I had another affair, and the man that I had an affair with ended up being my boyfriend for a few years after me and my ex-husband separated. I think from the beginning of being with a grandmother that treated me like a piece of crap to now being in a relationship that I'm just destroyed and slept with multiple men, but there was no God. And if he was there, he was not a nice person.
I grew up in a Christian home with two parents who also grew up in Christian families. When I was young, about seven, my parents moved to a camp in Central Illinois, a Christian youth camp. and that was a really, really cool way to grow up, just surrounded by youth groups and Christian kids. And coupled with that, I also grew up in the church, surrounded by a family that didn't just believe it, but they lived it. For me, growing up, the key word, I think, in my family would be acceptance. I didn't find that out till later, that that was a key word, but it was exactly what I knew growing up. No matter what I did, I would always be loved, exactly as I am in any moment. You know, I had a faith, I saw how it had played out in my family's lives, but I did not have a direction, and I did not have a purpose that I felt like I was being pulled towards or called to, just kind of searching, longing for a fulfillment that it seemed like everybody else in my family had, and I just hadn't found yet.
You can just hear it in their words, can't you? When Bryce and Melissa and Jake speak, you can hear that they're just longing for something more in life. And maybe your story's like their story, maybe your story's different than their story, but here's the truth of the matter. We all know what it feels like to have these longings go unfulfilled in our lives. To ask the question, I mean, is this all there is? I mean, there's got to be more. There's got to be more out there. You see, it's in those moments of longing that Jesus shows up in our lives. And when Jesus shows up, many times he shows up in a way to bring us back home by telling us a story. In fact, today we're going to look at the beginning of a story that's one of the most famous stories that Jesus ever told. And it's found in Luke chapter 15. If you have your Bibles, go ahead and open them there. Luke 15, power up your devices. Luke 15, mark it, tab it, whatever. We're going to be there breaking it down the next 5 weeks. And this story is about a dad who's got two sons. And that younger son of the two is in a place in life where he's asking those questions. Is this all there is? I still haven't found what I'm looking for. I can't find any satisfaction. And so what he decides to do, he says, I am going to go pursue these longings. I'm going to go try to figure out what these longings are all about. And so instead of looking for those longings there at home and within his family, he decides, I'm going to go to a far-off place to pursue those longings. Because isn't that what we always do? We always think that thing out there, the thing that's unreachable, the thing that's unattainable, that magical thing that's finally going to make us happy and give us purpose and meaning and love and life, it's out there somewhere. And so this kid goes looking for these longings. And maybe you're going to relate to the story. So Luke chapter 15, verse 11 is where we're going to start today. It says this, it says, a man had two sons. The younger son told his father, I want my share of your estate now, before you die. I mean, this is a selfish kid, an impetuous kid. He is demanding that he get his share of the estate now, even though he has got an older brother. And you got to understand the context in which Jesus is telling the story. The story is being told in the ancient Near Eastern culture. And one of the most powerful, the most important things in that culture is this word, honor. Honor. And in that culture, the father holds all of the honor. And a son's responsibility is to honor his father and mother. And one of the ways he would honor his father and mother is as they get older, they would be taken care of by their son. I mean, see, you would inherit the family farm. You would inherit the family business. You would till the land that your father farmed, and then his father before him farmed, and his father before him farmed, and his father before him farmed, and they would get it ready to pass it on to you. But instead, what the son decides to do is insult his dad, say, Dad, I wish you were dead. In fact, I wish you were dead. I wish you were out of the picture, because then I can get my inheritance right now. Dad, you are dead to me. And here's what he's saying. He said, I don't care about you. I don't want the stuff I have right now. I want the stuff that's coming to me one day. I don't like this farm. I don't like you. I don't like your ways. I don't like this routine. I don't like this family. You're dead to me, Dad. Just give me my stuff. And amazingly, in this story that Jesus tells, the father gives it to his son. Now listen, before we write this kid off as a jerk, all right, let's just hit pause for a moment, and let's just be honest. Because I think this kid is saying on the outside what a lot of us have thought and felt on the inside. Is this all there is? There's got to be more. I just can't find what it is I'm looking for. And so he's basically looking for three longings that you and I, we all have in our life. And the very first longing that he is going after, it is the longing for purpose. It is the longing for purpose. Say purpose with me. 1, 2, 3. Purpose. He is looking for purpose in life. I mean, do you remember being 5 or 6 years old? You remember dreaming about when you were 5 or 6 years old, what you wanted to be when you grew up? Man, I want to be a policeman, or I want to be a professional football player. You know, I want to be a doctor or a nurse. I want to be a teacher, you know. I want to be a soldier. I want to be a trash guy so I can ride in the back of a truck like that, you know. I mean, when we were 5 or 6 years old, why in the world were we dreaming about what we wanted to be when we grow up? I mean, when I was 5 or 6 years old, I was picking boogers trying to learn how to tie my shoe, all right? But at 5 or 6 years old, why are we thinking about a career? Why are we thinking, do we need a job? Do we need to pay bills at that age? No. The reason we're thinking that way is because God has embedded something deep in us, this longing for purpose in life. Who am I? Why am I here? What is my destiny? And that longing has got a way of drawing us closer back to God. But this kid, instead of allowing it to draw back to God, what this kid did is he ran the opposite direction. He says, again, it's out there somewhere. It's out there somewhere. That's where this longing, I can find the answer. I can find what I'm looking for. It's out there. Because again, we always think it's out there somewhere different than right here. And I'll tell you, this longing for purpose in life, it's one of the loudest longings inside of us that will awaken us to draw us back to God. But there's a second longing that he sees, second longing that we have, and that's the longing of love. Can you say love with me on three? 1, 2, 3. Love. I mean, is there a deeper desire in you and I than the longing to love and be loved? I mean, that's what this kid is dealing with. Let's continue on in the story. Look at verse 13. He says this. A few days later, this younger son packed all of his belongings and moved to a distant land. And there he wasted all his money in wild living. He wasted all of his money in wild living. And so he goes off to Vegas. He goes off to Hollywood. He goes off to someplace exotic like Stark or Waldo. I don't know, all right? And so he heads out to this distant land, this far-off place. Because, again, we think the grass is always greener out there somewhere. That's where the good life is. And so the phrase wild living can literally be translated, you know, a night in Vegas, a night at Mardi Gras, a week in Panama City at spring break, or a frat party. I mean, all the sex you can think about. And this young son is just drifting further and further and further and further away. In fact, a little bit later in the text, we see from the older brother, he tells us why this brother wasted, or how this brother wasted all of his money, and it was on prostitutes. It was on prostitutes. Why? Because again, deep down inside of us, we have this longing to love and be loved. I mean, someone once said, anybody who's knocking on the door of a house of prostitution, they're truly just searching for God. And so whether it's knocking on the door of a house of prostitution, or it's an Ashley Madison account, or it's porn on the internet, or it's hanging out at a bar on a Friday night trying to pick somebody up so you can hook up, or it's just trying to make a love connection on Tinder. You are looking for love, and I'll tell you, you will never find love in any of those places. The only place you will find a love that will truly fulfill you is in Jesus Christ. He is your one and only love, and you'll never find it in anybody else like you'll find it in Jesus. And so this story takes just kind of a turn here, because this kid who had everything, this kid who had all this money, he blows it all. It's gone. He is busted. He is belly up. He's got nothing. And he is desperate and he is hungry. And so what does he do? He decides, I'm going to get a job. And he takes a job that no good kosher Jewish boy would ever take. He decides, I'm going to go work on a pig farm. He goes and he's feeding pigs and he's shoveling pig poo and doing all that stuff. And in the middle of this, scripture says that he begins to fantasize. He begins to drool over the thought of eating what the pigs are eating. I mean, that's how broken, that's how busted he is. I'm telling you, I grew up in farm country, southern Indiana. I grew up around pigs and cows and chickens and turkeys, and I never once ever thought about eating what those things were eating, all right? I mean, that's how low this kid is. He is broken and he's busted, and he begins to search for that third longing. And that third longing is the longing for meaning, for meaning. Say that on three. One, two, three. Meaning. He is looking for the deep answers to life's questions. Not why is grandpa's hair gray or grandma's hair blue. Not that type of question, all right? Or why is dad always grumpy, mom? Or, you know, why can't the Jags put a whole game together? None of those kinds of questions, all right? You know, it's the deep, deep questions of life. God, why, if you are good, is there so much hurt and pain in this world? I mean, God, if your promises are true, why are I seeing those in my life right now? God, are you even hearing my prayers? God, why do I always feel like I'm being taken advantage of? Why do I always feel like I'm being cheated? God, why do I feel like there's this cloud over me? I mean, these deep questions, and this kid tries it all. I mean, he starts with a longing for a purpose. I mean, there's got to be more out there. And he tries the longing for love. He wastes all his money on prostitutes. And it gets him to this longing of meaning where he's asking why. Why, God? Because his life is busted. His life is screwed up. He's saying, why is my life like this? Why is everything happening to me like this? And I'm telling you, the moment we get to that place of famine and hunger and brokenness in our life, we start asking those questions. And those questions are signposts that will draw us back to God. And sometimes in life, if you're like me, you say, you know, this world we're living in, it's a messed up place. It's not what it should be. I mean, you look around this world, you say, I mean, why is there hurt? Why is there divorce? Why is there murder? Why is there racism? Why is there all this stuff going on? Why is there pain? Why are there tears? Why is there cancer? Why is there death? It shouldn't be that way. And when we see those things and we ask those questions, it's literally drawing us back to God. Because what God says is you can search those answers out. You can search those answers out with me. And when you start asking those questions, when you start asking those deep why questions in life, what you're going to see is we have a good God, a God who loves us, a God who is caring, a God who is fair, a God who is just, not a God who sits back and goes, look what happened to you. I bet that hurt. That's not who our God is. We have a God who literally gave up his life on the cross, laid it down, sacrificed his life so that we could have life to the full. And so when you look around the world and you go, man, this world's a messed up place. It's not how it should be. God goes, I agree. And it puts a marker out there that draws us back to him. And here's what I've learned from my life and from a lot of your lives. Suffering is one of the tools God uses more than anything to draw us home. I mean, when things are good in life, what do? Man, I'm good, God. You can take a seat on the bench for a while, God. I got this right now. Everything is fine. I can handle things. Things are good, God. But the moment the circumstances change, the moment life changes, the moment life gets hard, then we go screaming to God, why? Why is this happening? And he says, hey, I'll give you meaning. When you're longing for meaning, I'll show you meaning. And so I don't know where you are right now. I don't know what longing that you're after right now. If you're longing for purpose, if you're longing for love, if you're longing for meaning in life. But here is what I can tell you. You won't find it out there. You won't find it in a distant land. You'll only find it with God. And God sent his son Jesus to draw us back in. Jesus says, hey, you want purpose in your life? I'll give you purpose. I'll give you a reason for getting up every day. I'll give you a vision for your life. You're looking for love. Jesus says, I am love. I am love. I loved you more than anybody will ever love you. My love will never wear out. You're looking for meaning. Jesus says, hey, come ask your questions. We'll go through this together. Because we have a loving God who will allow us to ask those questions and hold us close to his heart. I love what Anne Lamott wrote. Listen to what she said. She said these words, if we stay where we are, where we're stuck, where we're comfortable and safe, we die there. We become like mushrooms living in the dark with poop up to our chins. If you want to know only what you already know, you're dying. You're saying, leave me alone. I don't mind that this little hole is a rat hole. It's warm and dry. Really, it's just fine. You see, when we don't allow anything new to happen in our souls and in our lives, it's death. I mean, just as we need oxygen to breathe, we need to continue growing closer and closer to him. And sometimes what you and I need is an awakening to remind us of who we really are. Do you remember the name Elizabeth Smart? 15 years ago, Elizabeth, 14-year-old girl, was kidnapped out of her bedroom. And maybe you remember the press conference that happened immediately after that. Once they discovered she was gone, the press assembled there in the family's front lawn. And the father looked into the camera. Ed Smart looked into the camera and he said these words, "Elizabeth, if you are out there, we want you to know that we're doing everything we possibly can to help you and to find you and to bring you home." And then this father looked at that camera and he pleaded with those kidnappers, "Please, please let my little girl go." Maybe you remember that story. And maybe you remember how bizarre it was when you found out that literally she was living just a couple miles away from where she was kidnapped. And her kidnappers would put costumes on her and put wigs on her and literally would walk her around the streets near her home. And people would see her and they would kind of recognize her, but not really know who she was. But she would never tell anybody who she was. You see, she was brainwashed. She had this thing that psychologists would say is called Stockholm Syndrome. And basically what that means is she drifted so far away from her home that she drifted closer and closer to her captors and identified with them more. She was so lost that she didn't even know she was lost. And isn't that what happens to us spiritually so many times? We're so lost that we don't even know we're lost. Well, 9 months go by, and one day Elizabeth is in costume with a wig on, walking with her two captors down the street, and a police officer thinks he recognizes this young girl. So he goes over and he strikes up a conversation with her. He starts talking to her, and after a couple minutes, she blurts out, "I know you think I'm Elizabeth Smart, but I'm not Elizabeth Smart." And the police officer says, "Well, what about this wig that you wore?" "No, that's not a wig. That's really my hair." "Or what about these two people you're with?" "Well, those are my parents." You see, she was so lost. She didn't even know she was lost anymore. But yet she was so close to being found that she didn't even know it. And so this police officer continues talking to her. And he looks at her dead in the eye and says, "Elizabeth, I know it's you. I know who you are. You are Elizabeth Smart. You have a mom and dad who love you. You have a home that desperately we want to take you home to." And then this police officer pulled out of his pocket something he'd been carrying for 9 months. And it was a poster, a missing persons poster with her picture on it. And he took that picture out and he held it up. He says, "Elizabeth, look at this." And then in that moment, she looked at that picture of who she used to be. And she realized that there was this huge gap between who she used to be and who she is at that moment. And there in that moment, she had an awakening. And tears began to flow out of her eyes. And she looked at that police officer and she said, "Take me home. Take me home." Listen, my prayer for you over the next couple weeks is that there's going to be an awakening in your life. That each and every one of us in this room, some way, somehow, are going to hear from God, and he is going to draw us closer to him. I mean, I love what the great historian Augustine said. Augustine said these incredible words. He says, "Those who have a restless heart, you're never going to find rest until you find rest in God." You're never going to find rest until you find rest in God. You see, that's what this entire series is all about. Identifying the restless parts of your life, and instead of going looking out there for the answers, allowing those things to draw you back home. Now, let me give a couple plugs here, okay? If you've not yet grabbed this incredible book, Finding Your Way Back to God, I just want to encourage you. We've got it in the source. It's only 10 bucks. It is so worth so much more than $10. It is a great book. It's a great devotional. In the back, there is literally a devotional for every day as we're going through this series. I want to encourage you, grab it. I mean, of course, if you're in a neighborhood group, this would help in there. But even if you're not in a neighborhood group, this is a great way to just process what God is saying to you, how God is trying to awaken you and draw you closer to him. So I want to encourage you to grab this. If you're not in a neighborhood group, I want to encourage you to get in a neighborhood group. I mean, as you're going through this whole journey, if we're going through this together and we're being real and being honest, I'm telling you, you need to process this with other people. You can't do this journey just by yourself. And so if you've not joined a neighborhood group, you can still join a neighborhood group today. And you go out there to the pergola today, and they will sign you up out there today. Now, we're not giving away hot dogs this week, all right? So you'll have to go out there and say, "Hey, I want to do this. I want to be in a neighborhood group." And listen, here, what do you have to lose, all right? You've got nothing to lose. Give it a whirl. Give it a try. I promise you, it will be worth the time. And here's one more thing I want to ask you to do. You know somebody. In fact, during this message, you've probably been thinking about somebody in your life that's drifted. Somebody who's gotten lost. Somebody who doesn't know the way back to God. Someone that's longing for things and searching out there for answers. You know people. Invite them to church. Bring them, say, "Hey, I'll sit with you. I'll sit in church with you. We'll talk about this together. I'll buy you the book, whatever. Just come and let's just go on this journey together. So I want to encourage you to those things. Because again, what do you have to lose? I don't know if you ever heard of Blaise Pascal. Blaise Pascal, a great mathematician. And I mean, he was definitely in the world of math and science. And he was a raging atheist for a good portion of his life. But he met Jesus. And once he met Jesus, his life began to change. And then he began to challenge all those people who they used to talk about atheism together and all their disbelief about God and the Bible and Jesus. He began to challenge them with this challenge. And I love this challenge. Here is what he would say. If you wager that God is and he really is, then you gain everything. And if you wager that God is and you find out later that he really is not, you haven't lost anything. And so here's the deal. Here's my challenge to you. I don't know where you are at. I don't know what awakening. I don't know how far you are lost or how far you have drifted away from God. But my challenge is to give it a try. Just give it a try. What do you have to lose in life? Reach out to Jesus. Let him give you purpose in life. Let him show you what real love is all about. And let him give you meaning for your everyday life. What do you have to lose? Nothing. Give it a try. Just give it a try. And so here is also what I'm asking us to do. Every week during the series, you'll see in your bulletin. In fact, go ahead and open there now. You'll see in your bulletin that there is a prayer that we're going to be praying every single week. And it kind of goes along with Pascal's challenge. And it simply says, God, if you are real, make yourself real to me. Awaken in me the ability to see that you are what's missing from my life. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to rip this out this week, all right? I want you simply to rip this out of your bulletin this week, all right? And I want you to take that. And I want you to put it somewhere where you're going to see this every day. And I want to challenge you personally to pray this prayer every single day this week. And I promise you, you're going to see God show up in your life. And so let's just read this prayer together. Would you read this with me? God, if you are real, make yourself real to me. Awaken in me the ability to see that it's you that's missing from my life. Here's the deal. I dare you to pray that prayer. In fact, I double dog dare you to pray that prayer and see what God is going to do in your life. Church, would you pray with me? God, we thank you. We thank you for the way that you created us, the way you knit us in our mother's womb, and that you embedded deep inside of every single one of us this longing to reconnect with you. And God, I pray for each and every one of us as we are longing for purpose, as we're longing for love and life, as we're longing for meaning, as we're asking the question, is this all there is? There has got to be more. That instead of looking out there in some far off distant land, that we'll just come back to you. And we'll find that you are the answer to those longings in our life. And you're simply just trying to get our attention. You're trying to awaken us to the simple truth that you are drawing us home and that you are enough for us. And thank you for sending Jesus. Thank you for sending Jesus to be our guide. To simply just say, come with me. Just simply follow me. And if you follow me, I'll take you home. Thank you, Jesus. It's in your name we pray. Amen.